Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, friends and neighbors. Welcome back to the Bill Press Pod, and welcome to this week's roundtable. Yeah, even with Congress out of town, it's been a busy week where the battle lines on impeachment were drawn clearer than ever. Democrats, backed up by at least five witnesses, say there was indeed a quid pro quo. President Trump withholding military aid from Ukraine until Ukraine agreed to dig up dirt on Joe Biden. Republicans, after denying it for weeks, now agree that there was, in fact, a quid pro quo, but so what? It's not an impeachable offense. Public hearings start next week. Meanwhile, on the campaign trail, 2020, Elizabeth Warren unveils her big Medicare for All plan and receives incoming fire from Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Pete Buttigieg, and Amy Klobuchar. While Virginia turns even more blue and red, Kentucky elects a Democratic governor. Wow. Here to try to make sense of it all for us, John Bennett covers the White House for a Roll Call. Hey, John.
Hi, Bill.
Welcome back. Good to see you. Lauren Burke, writer for Black Press USA. Hello, Lauren.
How are you doing?
All right. We're doing great. And in from the campaign trail on a rare visit to Washington, D.C. For a communal visit, Alex Seitzwald. covers the campaign for MSNBC.
Hey, Bill, thanks for having me.
All right, Alex, great to see you. Welcome you all. So a little bit of breaking news. The president, of course, a couple of weeks ago announced that he was canceling subscription to the Washington Post and the New York Times. I'm sure you all saw his first tweet this morning where he said that a report in the Washington Post this morning that Bill Barr refused to hold a news conference saying that the president did not break the law in his phone call with President Zelensky from Ukraine, that was fake news. So, John, I guess he's reading the Washington Post after all?
Well, there is a difference between getting the print edition and having a digital subscription. I see what you did there, Mr. President. You know, we see him from time to time with a printout of stories. There was an event in the East Room recently, and he was asked about a story, and he reached into his jacket, into his suit jacket, and produced said story that the staff had printed out for him. So the digital subscriptions are still alive and well at the White House.
Yeah, we sort of knew, Alex, didn't we, that this was BS.
Yeah, I mean, you can't function without reading, pretending the New York Times and the Washington Post don't exist. It would be pretty counterproductive to his job of claiming that those newspapers are fake news if you can't even read the fake news. But it's also, it's the way he goes after these things where it's like the full flood of attacks where his attacks are contradictory, but he'll say they're anonymous sources that don't exist, but they're also partisan sources who are out to get him. So, you know, they're non-existent partisan sources who are also in the fake news press. Just choose your one.
Yeah.
He can't help himself. He's got to know what people are saying about him because he's just a full-fledged narcissist. So there's no way that the information will ever completely be turned off. He will always be looking at what people write about him.
But it's sort of like with CNN, right? He says nobody watches CNN. Never watch CNN. And then he goes on and tweets about Don Lemon, right?
Lauren said he's a narcissist. I will say that I think it's safe to say he has an addiction to coverage about himself. I mean, we could say that.
That's a good definition of a narcissist.
Yeah, well, got to keep the reporter hat on somewhat here. I can say I have noticed that I have not seen the stacks of the physical newspapers, at least in the press areas of the White House, at least where the staff works in the West Wing. So I've noticed that those, at least, they're not visible if they're still there.
technically, I think the distinction you may make, which is that really not a distinction anymore with so many people getting their news online.
Right.
So last week at our roundtable, we talked about the testimony of the chargé d'affaires for Ukraine, William Taylor, talking about that maybe being a game changer. Was there another game changer this week in the testimony or when Gordon Sondland went back? All the witnesses are given a chance to review the deposition, the written copy of the deposition, before it's made public. And he went back and looked at it and said, no, I want to change this. And I want to say there was a quid pro quo. That's a big deal, Alex.
Huh? Just a tweak that he wanted to make, which was the entire thing was the opposite of what he remembered.
Right.
He said he refreshed his recollection, which I think is, you know, on the short list for all time Washington Hall of Fame spin terms.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's so he said, actually, in fact, I do believe there was a quid pro quo. I do believe there was pressure applied to Ukraine that they wouldn't get the military aid unless they did the investigation into the Bidens that the Trumps wanted. So it's a major reversal. And this is not a guy who you can say is an Obama holdover. He's not an intelligence official. He is a Trump donor. The only reason that he was in the administration in the first place was because he gave money. He's a hotel owner.
$1 million.
He gave $1 million to the inaugural committee. He's a hotel owner. He's not, the only reason he's there is because he's loyal to Donald Trump. So I think he's an especially credible witness for Democrats now that he's recanted.
But, Lauren, it looks like he was just trying to save his ass, right?
Because it's nothing more clear.
He had lied to Congress.
He lied to Congress, and there's nothing that will clear the mind quicker than your attorney telling you about perjury charges, right? So some sort of discussion obviously happened in the background, and he came back, and I don't know whether his attorney slipped him a photo of Cyrus Vance or what happened, but he clearly realized the ramifications of perjury. In a lot of these cases, of course, people typically don't go down for the thing that is the overriding issue. They go down for lying to investigators. I mean, it happens over and over and over again.
Right.
And he's probably lucky that he was able to go change what he said, because in most of these cases, you're not able to do that. So
John, he becomes, we lose track, right? The fifth or sixth witness, administration official witnesses, including Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, who was, is that his name, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, who was on the call, mm-hmm. who has said, yes, there was a quid pro quo. That sort of makes this whole effort to out the whistleblower kind of meaningless, doesn't it?
In a way, it does. What the president's trying to do with the whistleblower is the same thing he's trying to do with most things. He's trying to fire up his base. He's trying to ensure, you know, this gigantic conservative turnout in the right places, trying to paint the whistleblower as just part of a liberal cabal. But what Sondland did when he changed his testimony for the House Democrats, he handed them a gift, because he was the only one. There was one official who had not said there was a quid pro quo, and that was Sondland. And now Sondland says, yes, there was, and I delivered the message. So it takes that off the table now, because, you know, now the Democrats have a consistent testimony string that they can point to, and they're going to start public hearings next week. In this tribal era that we're in politically, though, I wonder if even public hearings, if you know, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman and Bill Taylor and maybe Gordon Sondland sitting at the witness table on live television saying, yes, I understood there was a quid pro quo and it came directly from President Trump. I still wonder if that's going to break through. I wonder if that's going to matter in these six or seven swing states where, you know, all the experts and the Trump campaign folks will tell you and the Democratic folks will tell you where this election will be decided. I just wonder if it's going to sway enough people, even if Bill Taylor, who is the leadoff hitter and the most important witness for Democrats, if he lays this all out very plainly, very clearly, and says, yes, the president ordered this in so many words, I still wonder if that's going to really shift public opinion in a way that it's going to change enough minds among Senate Republicans to have any other conclusion here than the president's impeached before Christmas, the Senate has a trial in the new year, and he's acquitted.
So how much, Alex, are the networks going to cover these hearings?
Oh, I think it's going to be huge. I mean, I can't speak on behalf of my employer, but yeah, I was just in Iowa on the 2020 trail, and all the campaigns are very nervous that they're just going to be completely ignored because all the networks are going to be entirely focused on the impeachment hearings.
Right. So if that is out there in the public, Lauren, to John's point, aren't the battle lines really already drawn pretty clear that on the one side, it's yes, there was a quid pro quo. And on the other side, it's yes, there was a quid pro quo, but so what?
Yeah, well, but it's not a because the first poll that we just saw, polling that came out, that indicates a majority of Americans are okay with impeachment. So that was the first time that happened. The president's numbers have been underwater for quite some time. What we just saw this week in Kentucky and Virginia would indicate that it's meaningful. Now, it may not be specifically meaningful in terms of, okay, if he gets impeached, you know, can his numbers get worse or will he lose in 2020? It can't help him, though. I don't know why it would help him. But I think people are getting tired of the constant talking about process and arguments and investigations and not policy. When we have a country that, you know, has some policy needs that are sitting there always getting ignored because we're in this constant cycle of dealing with political conflict.
Well, I want to go back to the whistleblower in a second, too, on that whole attack line of attack. But in terms of Republicans standing by Donald Trump, even Lindsey Graham, who broke with Donald Trump a little bit over Syria, right? Then sort of patched that up with a Band-Aid of we're going to leave a few 50 troops there or something like that. He has really swung around to saying he thinks this whole argument, whatever they say, is meaningless, right? Here's Lindsey Graham.
I've read the transcript for myself. I made up my own mind. Volker, the special envoy, said there was no quid pro quo. Sunderland has changed his testimony to say he presumes there was. What I can tell you about the Trump policy toward the Ukraine, it was incoherent. It depends on who you talk to. They seem to be incapable of forming a quid pro quo.
So this is a new line of defense, John. They're just incompetent.
Right. It's the incompetence.
This is meant as a positive, right, for Lindsey Graham. They're incompetent.
What choice do they have? Are they going to admit that the president committed crimes? I mean, so they're always, that's why their strategy, as Alex already brought up, of sort of bringing up that there's this dark state, there's this entity, the magic hand that's out there that's against us, that's making this happen, is off of the facts of the conversation, because you cannot argue the facts of the conversation.
They won't even try then.
No, John. And if you spend time with the transcripts of Sondland and Kurt Volker's testimony, Lindsey Graham has a point here. I spent hours with those documents, and there was confusion among both those gentlemen. They're reporting confusion from John Bolton. He's confused. His deputy, Ms. Hill, is confused. NSC staffers. No one really knows what's going on here. No one knows who's in charge. No one knows who's kind of driving the Ukraine policy train. And they find out at a certain point in May, it's not until late May, May 23rd, a meeting in the Oval Office with the president, that the conductor of this here train is one Rudolph Giuliani. So, but then Sondland and Volker don't really talk to Giuliani. So they're over here doing their, as Sondland said, I went back to doing my own thing. They're not communicating directly with Giuliani. So they're trying one policy path while Giuliani is out here trying to get these investigations started. And then there's the matter of the aid, and Sondland and Volker and others are trying to get that moving. They couldn't get a straight answer on why it was frozen. And it's not until around the time of the now infamous July 25th call that they start to piece it together what's going on here.
Right. And Trump, in the middle of it all, probably doesn't know where he's going from one day to the next, right?
No, and the picture they paint, those two, Sondland and Volker, paint a picture which has been corroborated by Lieutenant Colonel Vindman and others, that Rudy was in the president's ear more than anyone else about Ukraine, more forcefully with they call it this negative narrative that he reinforcing that, you know, Trump already was getting negative information from Fox News and other places, John Solomon in the Hill, which was feeding Fox News's coverage. So Trump's watching that. Then he's talking to Rudy. Then the professional diplomats come in and say, no, sir, President Zelensky is different. He ran on this. He has to do this if he wants to get reelected. He's a politician now, just like you. And Trump's not listening. Trump's saying, yeah, but Rudy says, yeah, but I saw on Fox this person say this about Ukraine. They're all bad people. They're all corrupt. And they couldn't break through that. The Volker, Sondland, and others couldn't break through that.
Right. So, Alex, it really comes down to the fact that it's your fault.
Yeah.
You in the media. In fact, as Rand Paul said the other night, I mean, you're just not doing your job.
Well,
let's listen to Senator Paul, right?
Hunter Biden made $50,000 a month. We know he got it only because of his family connections. We also now know the name of the whistleblower. I say tonight to the media, do your job and print his name.
Why don't you, Alex?
Well, I mean, first, it's an incredible turnaround for the so-called libertarian Rand Paul to be out here wanting to name a whistleblower. He was a very pro-defender of Edward Snowden and the previous leaks, who did not go through the proper channels like this whistleblower did, it should be said. But I think...
May I just put a little footnote on there? And in 2014, announced that he was going to introduce legislation, he, Rand Paul, to strengthen the protections for federal employees, whistleblowers.
Right. Yeah. So, but I think...
Now he wants to hang one.
To hang one. Yeah, I mean, essentially, I think the way that all of this makes sense is if you just assume for Republicans defending Trump, the facts do not matter. They have already concluded that he's innocent, or at least they've concluded that they have determined to conclude that he's innocent, and they're acting more like defense attorneys than like politicians. So they've come to the conclusion that they want, and now they have to find some way to get there, and that may change the path of how you get there. It's the media's fault. It's the deep state's fault. It's the process. It's Adam Schiff in the basement. It doesn't matter. We just have to get somewhere to him being innocent.
Right. I love the basement argument, by the way, because why are they in the basement? It just happens to be because the skiff is located in the basement. Now,
the most state-of-the-art skiff on Capitol Hill that both parties signed off on. And trust me, I was covering Congress, and when Republicans were in the majority, they used the same room a lot.
Which happens to be in the basement.
But classic Trump. It's classic Trump, because the implication is you only do nefarious things in the basement.
Makes sense to me. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Right. By the way, there is other stuff going on, not just the impeachment. We would be remiss if we didn't recognize that. So we'll jump into non-impeachment news after a quick break. Today's roundtable for the Bill Press Pod, brought to you by the Iron Workers Union, those good men and women of the Iron Workers Union. They are building our communities today under the leadership of President Eric Dean, you bet, and ready to rebuild America's infrastructure tomorrow. Check out their website at ironworkers.org.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Look, Looking back at the news of this week with today's roundtable, John Bennett from Roll Call, Lauren Burke from Black Press USA, Alex Seitzwald, MSNBC, elections, 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 three big state elections this week, and with some good news and bad news for both Democrats and Republicans, I guess. Let's start with Virginia. First time in 26 years that Democrats have control of both houses of the state legislature. Lauren, big deal.
A really big deal. So this to me is a continuation of what was started in 2017, the wave of 2017. All 15 legislators mm-hmm. that were elected in 2017 were reelected again.
Flipped 15 in 2017.
Exactly right. And so to me, the two takeaways are that it is a reflection of, I think, fear around Donald Trump. There is the idea that there are other factors in these states, and obviously the issues in Kentucky around education and healthcare and all that. But I do think at the end of the day, what gets voters out the door is something emotional, something that makes them angry, and something that transcends issues. So I think that that was one of the takeaways. The other takeaway I would think too would be that the issue, the scandal that happened in February had no impact whatsoever. There was always this idea in Virginia that that was going to impact, mm-hmm. you know, the Democrats' races, et cetera, and so on. And full disclosure, I actually consult for Crisis Comms, Justin Fairfax, who is the lieutenant governor of Virginia, who is, of course, mm-hmm. involved in that. And what we found is that there was no impact. When a voter goes into a voting booth, they are looking at the two people, and then that's it. But somehow Trump is transcending that, because I'd like to think consistently that, well, why would Trump affect the two names that you're looking at on the ballot? But in fact, I think it definitely does, because it galvanized Democratic turnout in a way that they have not seen in a lot of years.
Right. So, Alex, some people say that the real story, I don't want to talk, John, about you and Kentucky and Donald Trump's role down there, but first, Alex, that the real story Tuesday was not Virginia, was not Kentucky, it was Pennsylvania, where, talk about the suburbs, as mm-hmm. we saw in Virginia, mm-hmm. yeah, right. Pennsylvania, the suburbs around Philadelphia, right. which have been one of them, Delaware County, Republican, Delaware County. Since the Civil War days.
Yeah.
Now all Democratic.
Right, Bucks County too, which is up there. Mm. Yeah, I mean, this is the big political trend that we're seeing across the country, and it just keeps being borne out. These are very way, way down ballot elections that we're talking about here.
Yeah.
County supervisor, county, right. you know, countywide office holders, but they are an indication, because when you're that far down the ballot,
they're the farm team,
and people, it really gives you a sense of, it's almost a generic partisan test, because people don't really know county supervisor people. They know the party, so you're almost voting, you know, generic Democrat, generic Republican. Yeah, so these are right outside the kind of the Philly suburbs. These, you know, longtime Republican stronghold suburbs, going to be key in 2020. They flipped towards Democrats, just like a lot of in Virginia. A lot of the state legislative districts that flipped are the suburbs in Richmond and Northern Virginia. There are no Republicans left in the representing Northern Virginia. Similar in the Richmond suburbs, and this is happening everywhere across the country.
Right, and then we get to Kentucky, right, where Donald Trump went down the night before. I don't know whether you were with him or not, John. The night before, I got Matt Bevin up on the stage with him. Matt Bevin, who really tried to nationalize this election.
Right.
By wrapping himself around Donald Trump, and it didn't work. So then the Trumpers, right, say, well, he was an unpopular governor. There was no way we could save him. He did better than he would have done if Donald Trump had gone it down there. That was their spin. So
yeah,
what does this say about Trump's coattails?
Well, I talked to a strategist and a couple professors who have watched this race and are watching 2020 closely and you know, track 2018. And they say that this shows that Trump's coattails only really extend to rural areas, and the whole ball game for Trump will be, you know, he'll try to weigh in on these. He'll try again Thursday in Louisiana, next Thursday in Louisiana to try to help the Republican governor candidate down there. But for him, he's just got to really, you know, jack up rural turnout for himself in 2020 and try to offset the hemorrhaging that he's seeing in the suburbs. And that's what we saw in Kentucky. You know, the suburbs really went for Lieutenant Governor Beshear. And it really makes you wonder if Trump has any coattails in the places that are going to matter here. Because if he's just going to try to jack up his conservative turnout, you know, that might not help other Republican candidates. It certainly didn't help Bevin. We'll see if it helps Mr. Risponi down in Louisiana. That's a very close race with John Bel Edwards, the incumbent Democratic governor. It's neck and neck. It's a dead heat. And the president and his campaign announced after as the rally was ending last night that he's going back next Thursday. So he is taking ownership of that Louisiana race. It didn't work out in Kentucky, but the spin from the White House and the Trump campaign yesterday was, well, there were 14 statewide races in Kentucky. Republicans won 13. So the president's role there, injecting himself, did play a role, and we went 13 out of 14. And they, you know, in so many words, said Bevin was just a terrible candidate and an even worse governor. He alienated way too many people. He just picked too many fights. And the president couldn't help him. But as you said, they said, you know, the president made the margin a lot smaller, but couldn't. Basically, Bevin was just too awful to save.
Yeah. Hmm. As a candidate who ran for statewide office in California and lost, the size of the margin doesn't really matter. What really matters is whether you win or lose. I just want to throw that out there.
They're not. They have a point that Bevin is one of the least popular governors in the country.
Yeah. Yep.
But if Trump can't bring out the base to get Matt Bevin reelected in a state that Trump won by 30 points.
Right. Thank you.
Then if you're a Republican in a blue state, a purple state, then I think you start to worry.
Right.
Because if Trump should be able to bring you across the finish line anywhere, it should be in Kentucky.
So I saw the morning after my friend Hugh Hewitt, conservative radio talk show host, tweeted out that the message it's clear from last night that if Republicans want to win in 2020, they will hug Donald Trump and stand close by him.
Well, obviously his poll numbers would not indicate that. People like Andy Beshear would not indicate that. And the Virginia legislature going to 55 seats, the 45 would not indicate that. I actually think that, you know, there's fatigue. It's not just the Trump thing, but there's something underneath there with regard to real actual issues. Obviously in Kentucky, the healthcare issue played a big role. Mm-hmm. But when you see Virginia go from purple to now blue, and you see that they can't, you know, the Virginia Republican Party can't elect a Republican, haven't elected one since 2009. And the one they did elect was a moderate Republican. It was Bob McDonald. So, I mean, the idea that that doesn't matter and that you've got this guy running around wanting to do rallies, reminding everybody of how partisan we are, that can't possibly not. I mean, he is the leader. Obviously, the leader of the party is your highest elected official. So the way that he comes across to voters, particularly swings, matters. You know, this is where it really matters.
I'm curious, John, about, I mean, I lost track about how many, Donald Trump did what, three rallies this week? I mean, it's just one's still coming up, right? Two this week.
Yeah,
but it's almost like every other night, right, or every third night, he's out on the road.
That's right.
In some red state during a rally. Mm-hmm. I mean, why?
I wouldn't be surprised if we get a rally early next week. I don't really have anything to indicate that just yet. But
just because he likes doing them and they need to fill his time up with something?
He likes doing them. He is convinced that it makes a difference, that it helps these Republican candidates. And he thinks it helps his own reelection. And he does view this as something of a television show. And he wants to be out there. He wants to be in front of the cameras. You know, it's clear he's his own communications director. He thinks he's his own best defender, communicator. He wants to be out there, and the rally gives him an hour and a half to do that.
And Bill, you know this, as somebody who's been in politics. I've been in politics since I was 12. My mother worked for a politician in New York. Wow. Politicians love to be in front of an audience cheering. Mm-hmm. And I think Trump in particular is addicted to that. But I think it's a universal thing with most politicians.
He needs it. He needs it. And when he's in trouble senses trouble, I will, in the basement of the White House, I'll look at my reporter colleagues and say, we're going to get a rally. We're going to get a rally soon because the boss is going to need it.
All right.
And within a day or two, they'll announce a rally.
Okay, now, there is a Democratic primary going on. And this week, Alex, you've been on the road. You said you just got back from Iowa. So the latest from Iowa, Quinnipiac yesterday, Elizabeth Warren, 20, Pete Buttigieg, 19, Bernie Sanders, 17, Joe Biden, 15, for all practical purposes, these four are tied in Iowa. What's going on? What do you feel on the ground out there? Is this Buttigieg surge real? Is Biden fading? Is Elizabeth Warren running away with it? What's going on?
I think all of the above, potentially. I mean, yeah. So I was on the booty bus, as they call it, the Buttigieg bus. And one of the other reporters kind of put it to him, it looks like you're a front runner-ish in Iowa. And he said, yeah, I'll take that. So I think that's kind of where he is. And we were in these counties that switched from Obama to Trump up in kind of northeastern Iowa, and he was getting huge turnout for a candidate in these, you know, a town of 7,000 people getting 1,000 people to turn out. So Buttigieg is looking very good. One concern I did hear from people is that he might be peaking a little bit too early, that, you know, he's the kind of fresh face. Mm-hmm. He might not be built to last. Biden is definitely struggling, and I've been hearing from his team that they're now starting to say, well, we don't really need to win Iowa. We're the only candidate who can lose Iowa, lose New Hampshire, because, you know, it's New England, Elizabeth Warren or Bernie are going to win there, but we're going to come in big in South Carolina, and then we're built to last for the long haul. Warren, I do think there's some concern that she's plateauing a little bit. She's been coming under a lot of pressure on mm-hmm. Medicare for All. Still really strong. I still think she has a lot of room to grow. And I talk to a lot of voters who, even if she's not their number one, she's on their list. And Bernie still has this really strong core loyal base. I don't think he's built it, but I was surprised after his heart attack. I think a lot of people thought that would be the beginning of the end for him. And if anything, his supporters have only doubled down and recommitted because they feel like he needs us now more than ever. But his challenge now remains the challenge that he's had all along, which is how does he build that and expand that base?
Right. So, Lauren, it seems that Elizabeth Warren has just decided to bet the ranch on Medicare for All.
Yeah. Well, I think that
the whole program, she put it out there, how I'm going to pay for it, and there's some creative or unusual ways of paying for it. But at any rate, that's her plan, and she's riding it.
I think when you have 250,000 Americans on GoFundMe asking for money for healthcare bills, that's an indicator that it is a huge issue that we have not fixed. Other countries have figured out how to fix. It touches everybody. Mm-hmm. It goes across demographics. It's rural. It's urban.
Are Americans ready for her fix?
I don't know, but every time I hear something about how to pay for something, even if it's $20 trillion, I always think to myself, you know, what she likes to say, which is that we always figure out ways to pay for things when it's a missile or a war. But then when it's healthcare for our own citizens, everybody mm-hmm. wants to talk about how we can't pay for it. So I know that that's a, you know, liberal progressive answer to it, but it's true. I mean, we do pay mm-hmm. for things and get into debt and we figure it out and we move forward. But then when we talk about healthcare, oh my God, we can't do it because we can't pay for it. Now, obviously, Klobuchar has this argument, which is a relevant argument, that, you know, how are you going to pass this through Congress, right? We just had a war over healthcare in 2010. The Tea Party was created over healthcare, so and stopping that from happening. We get all that. But the very conversation of it, it's amazing how she's having more trouble, of course, from her own party because we're in the primary season than anybody else. And so I think that she, you know, I predicted on your show that she's going to get the nomination. Biden's going to lose. Because I think Biden, people who lose just lose again and again on the national level. But anyway, I think that she is going to be able to, you know, figure out a way to message this better. And she's going to have to obviously articulate the money piece better.
So John, speaking about Joe Biden, he is getting a little flack now because yesterday he said, or maybe a day before, that once Trump is gone, that Republicans are going to have an epiphany. And they're going to start wanting to work together with Democrats again. And I'm the guy that can work with the Republicans. He's done this before, right? That I worked with Republicans when I was there as president. I'll be able to work with them. We'll be able to get things done. Is that a message that resounds?
Your listeners can't see that I'm grimacing right now. I remember 4 or 5 years of my life when I was on Capitol Hill running around covering shutdowns and fiscal cliffs, and Donald Trump was in New York in Trump Tower and at Mar-a-Lago as a private citizen. This is not completely about Donald Trump. I hate to tell the former vice president that. Republicans didn't work with Barack Obama that much. Just kind of when they had to, or on certain things. You know, we're not, I don't get the sense that we're headed back to some era where
Kumbaya,
where a President Biden can get in the motorcade from some scene out of West Wing or walk up Capitol Hill to go meet with Mitch McConnell. They're going to close the door and hammer it out in some dramatic meeting. This is bigger than Donald Trump. He's a product of it, and he's exploited it, and he's made it. He's intensified it for sure. But the way the money works and where the donors are and how the system works right now, there's just no incentive for either side to really work together or bend that much to get something done. They can't even pass an infrastructure bill. They agree on 80% of it.
It may be an argument on Biden's for Biden that might work in the general, but well, it's not real hot in the primary.
The way it works in the primary, the way he thinks it works is it's you make it all about Trump, and then therefore whoever has the best chance of beating Trump becomes more important than ever. Which that's his whole argument, right? He's the electable one. At this big speech in Iowa, the dinner formerly known as the Jefferson Jackson dinner, he said the only thing standing in our way is Trump. The only thing. Once we get rid of Trump, the road is clear for massive progress, which is kind of a diss of Barack Obama in a way, because there was no Donald Trump when Barack Obama was president, and he struggled mightily. But I think it's rhetorically it makes sense for Biden, because he's just trying to say all we need to do is beat Trump. Therefore, we need to pick the guy who can beat Trump, and that's me.
Okay, we can't move on to your favorite stories of the week. We cannot abandon the political scene unless we have a word from each of you about the biggest political news of the week, if not the century. Jeff Sessions is running for re-election, he announced, in Alabama. Is that a given? He runs, he wins? Lauren,
probably. You know, I had a feeling this might happen because, of course, the reason that he was out of the Senate is he went to DOJ under Trump, made that huge mistake of trusting Donald Trump with a piece of his career. And quite frankly, as somebody who covered Congress, he was a very good person to talk to. He liked to talk to the press. He was pretty open. And once he got into Trump land, he couldn't really say anything. And I think that kind of bothered him. And it's sort of a weird reason in the back of my mind why I think he's coming back. And frankly, I don't think he would want his career to end as it did, which it ended in a way that was, of course, crazy.
Yeah. And Donald Trump turned on him and trashed him every opportunity that he could. He took a lot of abuse then. So, John, how do you see it?
I think this is going to be just some great theater to watch. Of course, I'm a big college football fan, and Tommy Tuberville is running in the GOP primary, and get ready for the jokes that, well, Tuberville just lost another big game. It's what he does. So I agree with Lauren. I think Sessions will probably win, but the theater will be, how does Trump react to that? And how much does Sessions embrace Trump? Or does he talk about healthcare and jobs and the fact that he knows the Senate and all of that?
And Roy Moore is running again, too. So this is just going to make it especially interesting.
Yeah,
So it'll be tough for Donald Trump to decide which one he's going to endorse, Roy Moore. But not good news for Doug Jones.
Probably not. I mean, nothing is really good news for Doug Jones, but this is especially bad news for Doug Jones, who, you know, won against Roy Moore. And he had been hoping that Moore would run again and that Moore would be the nominee again. I think Jeff Sessions is going to be, would be much, much tougher for Jones to win again.
Yeah. Well, we never even got to the Roger Stone trial. We'll save that for another time. It'll be going on for a while. Great conversation, friends. Thank you so much for joining us. And we know we cover so much, we read so much that every once in a while there's one little story that kind of pops out and gets your attention for the week. We always ask you to share that with us. Who wants to start?
I will start. I think it's a pretty easy one, but it's Julie Briskman who flipped the president the bird.
Oh, yeah.
On the highway, and yes. Now she just won for Loudoun County supervisor. I just couldn't resist that, even though it's a very obvious, easy one to pick. So that's the story. I mean, she flipped the president the bird. Somebody got a photo of it, and I don't know whether they were in the travel pool or not, but somebody got it.
I was going to say, who got that thing, right?
It was someone in the press pool that day in the travel pool.
And she lost her first one because of that, right?
Yeah.
And then she ran again, and this time
she won.
She flipped a seat.
Exactly. That's right.
John?
Sure.
Very good.
Well, back to college football I go. It's late in the week. You see where my brain goes late in the week. But, you know, looking for a little break on Saturday, I was very excited planning my weekend around LSU, Alabama, number 2 versus number 3, playoff implications. It's everything a college football fan wants. Brad Nessler, Gary Danielson on the call. I can't wait. looking for a little break from the Trump world and the Trump madness and impeachment. And then the president last night at the rally announces he is going to be in Tuscaloosa for this epic SEC matchup. So on Saturday afternoon, get ready to see probably 100 cutaways to President Trump. And who knows, maybe he'll join Brad and Gary in the booth for a little little interview. Who knows? He might even name the whistleblower on Saturday. So
goes your Saturday.
There goes my Saturday.
Alex?
I was going to choose, because it's such a good, obvious story,
yeah.
the flipping the bird to flipping the seat as well. And I don't really have a backup here, so I'm just going to say Bill Press is my favorite story of the
week. Well, my favorite story, for some reason, I'm on a lot of right-wing email chains, and one of them, and I get a lot of them every day, and a lot of them from Donald Trump. And almost every day, there's an offer for me to contribute $2 or $3 to have a meal with Donald Trump. And I must say, I've really been tempted to do that, just to kind of see what would happen if he walked in and I was the one he was having breakfast with or something. Well, it turns out, as Judd Legum, a friend of ours from Think Progress, reported, that this is all a fraud. This is all a fake, that these people who get this, who win, end up, for the most part, not seeing Donald Trump at all. One woman, they flew in from wherever to New York to this breakfast, and he never even showed up. It was a big crowd, big breakfast, but he was supposed to be in attendance. He wasn't even, not even in the room.
Right.
And one other person, it turned out that the big prize was not having lunch with Donald Trump, but standing in line at a buffet with Kimberly Guilfoyle. So I just want to put out the warning, right, that if you were ever tempted, like I was, to go for broke and spend your $3 to have a meal with Donald Trump.
None of these people have figured out that all you have to do is go to a Trump property, like the Trump Hotel on Penn Avenue, and have lunch with them.
Well, I think the people that are, who are, you know, playing the lottery like this Republican RNC lottery, whatever it is, don't have the $200,000 to join Mar-a-Lago. Exactly. That's my guess.
That's probably true.
Right. Anyhow, so word to the wise. That's all. Don't go for it. And that's it for this week's roundtable. Oh no, I have a little parting shot here. Oh, I'm sorry about this. Let me add that and remind you, as always, that the views expressed in the parting shot are mine and not necessarily the members of the panel. Who's the whistleblower? I demand to know who he is so I can attack him, smear him, call him a never-Trumper, Democratic hack, or communist agent. Yes, that's Donald Trump's latest line of defense in the impeachment saga. He tried to say that the phone call to the president of Ukraine was perfect. He called it another witch hunt. He tried to say there was never any quid pro quo. But none of that worked, so now he's back to what he does best and what he's done against so many other people. James Comey, Robert Mueller, Nancy Pelosi, Adam Schiff. Ugly personal attacks. The whistleblower is only his latest target. But guess what? In this case, it's not going to work. Nobody cares who the original whistleblower is anymore, because the concerns that he raised about the president of the United States soliciting help from a foreign government in an American election, those concerns have been confirmed over and over again by witnesses in front of the impeachment inquiry, including one, NSA's Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, who actually listened in on the call. So, yes, it's disgusting for Donald Trump to pick on the whistleblower, disgusting for Rand Paul to demand that the media unmask him, disgusting for Donnie Jr. to name a person that right-wing media suspect is the whistleblower. But you know what? They're only wasting their time. No matter who he is, we now know he told the truth. And Democrats have all the evidence they need, even without him. So let's not forget, this impeachment inquiry is not about the whistleblower. This impeachment inquiry is about the abuse of presidential power by Donald Trump. And that's it for this week's roundtable. Next week, the fireworks begin on Wednesday with testimony from Trump's chargé d'affaires for Ukraine, Ambassador William Taylor. But for now, thanks to our panel, Alex, John, and Lauren. Thanks to all of you for listening. Now, before you sign off, here's our own quid pro quo. The quid is we offer you two great podcasts from the Bill Press Pod every week. The quo is you simply sign up for the Bill Press Pod by going to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or TuneIn, search for the Bill Press Pod, and sign up. It's that, or subscribe. It's that simple, and it's free. And even better, while you're there, give us a big 5-star review. Nothing's more important in helping us grow the Bill Press Pod. Again, thanks to our panel. Thanks to all of you for listening. Also, don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Bill Press Pod, so you'll get an alert when each new podcast is posted. Like, by the way, our very next podcast, an exclusive interview with me, former California Governor Jerry Brown, and dynamic candidate for president, Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Yep, Jerry Brown and Mayor Pete coming up next on the Bill Press Pod.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.